Is downtown Jacksonville going to get a bigger, nicer convention center? A closer look just ahead. Good Thursday morning. Hope you're staying warm out there on this chilly day. Live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live on the radio at 9. Also, make sure to get our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and through the WJCT app. Just ahead, could there finally be movement towards a new convention center and hotel downtown? Get on the line now with your thoughts and comments about what this might mean for the city of Jacksonville, 549-2937. Then later, the circus is back in town in St. Augustine. We'll go under the big top. Plus, it's a new movie written, produced, and filmed right here on the First Coast. All of that ahead this morning. But first, this hour. The Downtown Investment Authority voted Wednesday to issue a request for proposals to see if any private developers are interested in building a new convention center and hotel in downtown Jacksonville. Now, the center would likely be built on the site of the old county courthouse and city hall annex on the riverfront. The city has budgeted funds to tear down both buildings and offer up the land to a private developer willing to build this new center. It's all part of long-awaited plans to renovate downtown Jacksonville, including the district development across the river on the South Bank and more. This would move the convention center from its current location at the Prime Osborne site over on the western edge of downtown. It could be a game changer potentially for Jacksonville if it actually comes about. That's the question. Will this actually come about? A guy who's followed these types of plans for many years, many of which have never actually come about, is David Bauerlein, reporter for the Florida Times Union. And he joins us now in studio. Hey, David.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good to have you on the show, as always. And here's our question to callers. Do you think Jacksonville needs a newer, nicer convention center? What do you think of plans to tear down the old, abandoned county courthouse and city hall annex? They're sitting there empty on Bay Street. That's where the new facility would go. What do you think about this? Give us a call at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Emails go to First Coast Connect, WJCT.org. Tweets to at Melissa in Jax. Or weigh in on our Facebook page. And you know, David, this is nothing new for reporters like you. You've been following this for years. This has been talked about for a long time, building a nicer and much bigger convention center on this site, on the riverfront near the Hyatt Hotel. Now, though, the Downtown Investment Authority seems to be moving forward. What happened at the meeting yesterday?
Well, essentially, they did vote to go forward, issue a request for proposal, see if private development firms that have experience in this field are interested in doing something in Jacksonville. So the request for proposals will probably go out next month. Then there will be 120 days for the respondents to put something in writing, give their vision, their costs, how the thing would be financed, and then we'll know. Is there interest or not that's viable and that really does what the city wants to do?
And as you report in today's Times Union, they want a hotel with at least 350 rooms, convention center space with a 200,000-square-foot exhibit hall, a 40,000-square-foot ballroom, dozens of meeting rooms, hundreds of parking spaces, a big upgrade from the current facility over at the Prime Osborne.
Without a doubt, and it would be several $100 million of investment. Right now, the Prime Osborne is on the very low end when you look at how Jacksonville compares with other convention centers. This would put Jacksonville kind of in the middle of the pack, but it's a big advance in terms of where Jacksonville is, in terms of the capacity it has, the ability to actually be a player in this market.
Why is a convention center seen as such an important piece of the downtown puzzle? Can you explain that a little bit? Explain the thinking of the DIA, business leaders, tourism officials, et cetera.
Right. Well, it's basically bringing out-of-town visitors into the core of the city. When they're here, they spend money. The convention center itself has always been described to me as something that's not really a moneymaker in itself. It's sort of like milk in the supermarket. You got to sell milk to get people in, but you don't make money selling milk. The real economic benefit comes, people come in, they stay in hotel rooms, they go and eat at restaurants, they spend money doing things out and about in the town. And that's really where you get the the vibe, you get the people, they're out there walking the streets. It's just a way to add to the vitality of a downtown.
And theoretically, if this were successful, other bars, restaurants, other traffic, other excitement would sprout up around this new construction.
That would be the idea.
That would be the idea. And the Prime Osborne, theoretically, would become part of the intermodal transportation hub that JTA is planning, correct?
At this point, there's been, I don't think, a final word on what would happen. There's been a lot of discussion over the years about maybe moving Amtrak back downtown, and then the Prime Osborne would be part of an Amtrak station. Perhaps the Prime Osborne continues to do some of what it's done already, which is be sort of a city-based place for conventions and gatherings, which it hosts right now. And then that's a big part of the puzzle that hasn't really been sorted out completely.
It's a beautiful old historic building. So people, I'm sure, would want to know the fate of that building.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it was a great thing to preserve and renovate a piece of Jacksonville's history. It just has been something that's just not big enough, and also it's not well located enough. One of the things that came out of the study when they were looking at it is that when you talk to meeting planners, they want something where people can go to a convention and then they can walk out and within a 10-minute walk, be at their hotel, be at restaurants, be at shops. They kind of did that at the Prime Osborne Convention Center and compared it to other convention centers in other cities. Other cities had whatever number was there, 0000 for the Prime Osborne Convention Center. So they look at that and say,
an F, in other words.
Sure, if we're comparing you against other cities and we're saying, we're going to pick you, what do you have to offer outside the walls of the convention center, this convenience that adds to the whole experience that makes it worth it for us to say, you're the one we're going to have our convention with?
Now, David Bauerlein, you've seen a lot of these proposals come and go over the years in your tenure at the Florida Times Union. What are the big challenges to this actually becoming reality, in your view?
Right. I think the biggest challenge when you look at the report and the conversation that DIA had is that it is a question of just building a bigger convention center in and of itself is not going to create this big change for the city and being able to get more of these conventions. What the planners, meeting planners, have told everybody is you also have to have these attractions. And they look at what Jacksonville has right now and say, it's not enough. You can build the bigger convention center, but unless there's more for people to do after they finish with their meetings of the day, it's not going to raise Jacksonville's profile enough to say it gets the nod over other cities.
Is a private company going to be willing to spend several hundred million dollars to build this thing? At the same time, we're seeing on the other side of the river, Peter Rummel's development company has apparently struggled to find funding for his development, the district, and there's been a lot of back and forth over how that's going to be funded as well.
Exactly. They're all part of the bigger picture. One thing that would happen was when the consultant that was hired by the city talked to all these meeting planners and said, what do you think about Jacksonville? Their view was tepid in terms of what Jacksonville offers. So then they said, and it's kind of like those old those TV shows you see where you see a house before it's remodeled and after remodeled. You say, here's what it looks like now. And they say, we're not really into it. Then they say, well, here's what downtown would look like if the shipyards were developed, if the district is developed, if something like an aquarium is here. And they go, if all that happens, then you're in the game. So it's not just, build a convention center. It's do all these other pieces of downtown development happen, because it's only half of the equation to have a bigger convention center. So a private investor would probably have the same question. Is all this development going to happen? Is this for me to put this type of investment into Jacksonville for a convention center?
And how big a piece of the puzzle is Jaguars owner Shad Khan in all this and what he's planning to do in and around the sports complex?
It'd all be part of that, right? I mean, if the things that Shad Khan and his group want to do in terms of providing, there's been talk of an entertainment district in addition to what happens at the shipyards. Those are all the kind of things where if it's a convenient walk or it's easy to get to and you can have those things in place, then yes, that makes a big, that's a benefit to a convention center. It's vice versa. It's a benefit to Shad Khan to have out-of-town visitors coming in who might go to those developments along the shipyards and near the stadium.
All right, let's go to your calls right now. What do you think of plans now to tear down the old county courthouse and city hall annex? They've been sitting empty there on Bay Street for how many years is it now?
Right, I think for more than a decade, right, since the new county courthouse
opened. Yes, over 10 years. Finally now, it looks as though they will get torn down if somebody bids to put a new convention center and hotel on that site. What do you think about this, everybody? Give us a call, 549-2937, as we speak with the venerable David Bauerlein of the Florida Times Union. Tony is on the road. Hi, Tony. Good morning.
Hi, Melissa. This is a great conversation for the city. It's just a great idea. And as I was listening to your speaker talk about maybe returning the Amtrak station down to the original place of where it used to be, it would be wonderful and tie that in into making Jacksonville that part of the town and getting it towards the convention center, make it a destination. If you seen the way you can take the Amtrak down to Winter Park and get out and just enjoy that entire area for restaurants and shopping, and you can take boat tours of the lakes around Rollins College and all of Winter Park, and this could be a really good thing for the city.
Yeah, thank you for that, Tony. David, do you agree?
Yeah, I think that there would definitely be an added attraction to have the Amtrak station back downtown. That's where it originally was. You talk to people who went there before and generations ago. It's a very costly thing because there's a lot of track improvements you'd have to make, and it would not be as simple as just, you know, clicking a switch and you have the trains run there as opposed to where they go now to the Amtrak station in Northwest Jacksonville. But, yeah, that would be, again, another way to get people who are coming through town to actually maybe come off the train and go hang out and do some stuff in Jacksonville.
Well, JTA has broken ground on their intermodal transportation center. It would bring together the Greyhound bus station, the Skyway system. That they actually have broken ground on that now, I do believe. But not Amtrak, correct?
Not Amtrak, right. The rest of it's underway, but the big scheme is that you could even have it where you could, in an ideal world, you ride one of their express buses from the suburbs into downtown, get your and then hop on the Amtrak station train to go wherever you want to go. So the idea is to have all different kinds of lines of transit running into that same hub.
549-2937. Jenna is in Avondale. Hey, Jenna, good morning. Hope you're warm out there. Hope you're bundled up. Thanks for calling.
Yes, thank you. I just had a quick comment about the courthouse. It would be wonderful if government could extrapolate the decisions they're making for the courthouse and apply those to homeowners or small business owners that they seem to be strangling with rats in Riverside, Avondale. There are many small businesses that would love to come to even doctor's offices that are well needed here for us that would love to open up, but my doctor says, not only do they not have parking, but the rat stranglehold they have on some of these homes that are falling apart from the inside out, they're required to do so many renovations to the outside to keep with the mode of what rat wants it to look like to preserve the city. And yet we're just going to tear down a courthouse and allow government to do this and not apply the same, or it's not applicable to small business owners and homeowners. And I think it's a travesty that we're taking this away from our city. We could grow Riverside even to be a more kind of European city, which is the feel that it has now, but we're strangling small businesses to be able to do this. If you're going to allow the government to do it for the courthouse, then please allow homeowners to make changes that aren't so expensive and hundreds of thousands of dollars just to preserve the idea of what you want it to look like. Small businesses as well.
Thanks, Jenna.
Well, yeah, they may not be apples to apples in terms of the comparison between the two. But I can say in terms of the old courthouse and the city hall annex, They did look at the feasibility of reusing or keeping those as a courthouse mm-hmm. and eventually decided that it just wasn't cost feasible. And there was a move to try and say, let's move government buildings off the river.
Yes. So. But you know, I'm struck by your observation a moment ago that those buildings have been sitting there empty for a freaking decade. That is extraordinary. And then right down the street, the Berkman Plaza, sitting there, half built, for about the same amount of time. Some people around town, I'm sure you've heard this, call it the Beirut Berkman, because it looks like it's been bombed out. And, you know, Shad Khan made the famous comment that a homeless guy in Detroit has more mojo than millionaires in Jacksonville. That, you know, why is it so hard to get anything going here? Why do we have all these abandoned buildings or half-built buildings? Why isn't more happening? Well, you know, are these projects going to get off the dime? Are they going to get built? That's the question. That's what everybody's wondering.
Exactly, Melissa. And one anecdote I like to tell about the Berkman Plaza, the second one that's sort of half finished, is there was an expert in economic development for downtown who was visiting Jacksonville. So I did an interview with him, and he's been here to Jacksonville off and on. And I asked him, you know, what's your impression of downtown Jacksonville? He said, well, things seem to be happening. You know, I noticed there's that apartment tower under construction. So I had to explain to him that actually that apartment tower is not under construction. It's been sitting there like that for a long time. Yeah. That was years ago, and it's still sitting there. And I think that's exactly. I mean, there's a sense that the economy's going pretty good. When are some of these projects going to come off the drawing board in downtown? You drive up and down Butler Boulevard, and you see there's hundreds of apartments that are being built all the time. And you go, if people are building apartments, that's the lifestyle that downtown is well suited for. How come more of these apartments aren't being built in downtown? Why isn't more
happening?
Know,
and to be fair, though, there are projects going up in the urban core. There are some. And your publication and a sister publication, J Magazine, has been documenting those. So it's not all bad news.
No, and there are some projects going up. I think the larger point, though, is that downtown development happens when there's an economic growth mode, when times are good. They don't happen when times are bad, and those times are good now. So if it's going to happen, there's sort of a window of opportunity that won't stay open forever.
That's right. Okay, Herman is in Northwest Jacksonville. Hey, Herman, thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Hey, Lisa, how is everybody doing this morning?
Doing good, thanks.
Good. I'm kind of wondering, how is this going to affect where I grew up, which is College Gardens, and I guess you might call Newtown in that particular area, which I'm currently touring as we speak. And to be honest with you, all of this kind of sort of looks like Vietnam to me, a bunch of vacant houses, trash, and I guess rent that's basically skyrocketing up to $1,700 a month. And I'm wondering, for what? But even getting the money back, I think that the train station was supposed to go where it was going and bring development to the community, which evidently I don't think it did. But how is this going to bring people and companies who are moving down to Nocatee and St. John's County, where the growth is going, right down to Jacksonville? And I guess to get some bodies from where those lofts are going up, where the current convention center is and was supposed to do development, back to those areas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks for that, Herman.
Well, you hear that from some city council members too, which is supportive of downtown, but how does that fit into a bigger picture of redeveloping neighborhoods that also need specific attention? And I think that's going to be part of the questions that get asked a lot as it comes time for the city to actually put up its money for these projects. At a larger point, though, is that for neighborhoods that are in and near downtown, a decaying downtown would not be good for them. And so there is this gravitational pull towards St. John's County. If that just all slides towards St. John's County and towards that area of the metropolitan area, that's not going to be good for areas that are in and near downtown either.
Beth tweets the show with a correction. The courthouse has not been empty for 10 years. I met my husband in 2011, and he was still in the old courthouse then. So thanks for that, Beth. So it's less than a decade. Thanks for that, Beth. Number two, she says, tear it down, but keep the beautiful art that was inside and outside of that building. Ella tweets the show, I think Jacksonville would benefit with having a green, eco-friendly building there. Our climate supports heavy plant growth, and a green building would set our growing city apart from others. Beautiful on the riverbank. Thanks for that, Ella. Let's go to Richard on the south side. Hey, Richard, what do you think?
Hey, Melissa. Thank you for taking my comment. You mentioned Berkman, which is really why I wanted to call in. But really, I hear this every year, and it always strikes me that the focus on downtown is putting the cart before the horse. Cities exist for people to work in, and then they want to live near where they want to, where they are working. So if we don't have business downtown, there's really no point going downtown. So it's great to have an orchestra, it's great to have a place to walk around, but if there's no real reason to go downtown, for life purposes, I will never go anywhere with Jacksonville.
Well, what would bring you down?
Work, you know, businesses. We used to have a lot of insurance companies. That's all kind of drifted away. We really have to establish ourselves and encourage business to come and set up, and everything else would follow. You're not going to get it the other way.
Yeah, I mean, incentives brought, for example, Everbank to put their headquarters downtown. That's one recent example. Thanks for the call, Richard. Okay. Let's go to Stuart at the beaches. Hello, Stuart. Good morning, Stuart.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
Hello? Yeah. I love your show, and I like the idea of the convention center, but has any thoughts been put toward what the environmental cleanup costs might be, like we see in the shipyards, can be a large bill.
Yes, yes, that's right. He's got a very important point. What about that piece of it, David? Did that come up at the Downtown Investment Authority meeting?
Right. Now, the convention center would not go on the shipyards. The shipyards would be millions, if not tens of millions of dollars for the environmental cleanup. That's a little bit further away from the area. The area that we're talking about here, I don't think would have environmental cleanup.
It doesn't need any remediation?
It's basically that I know of. Now, who knows what that property was used for decades ago, but it's basically the site of the old county courthouse, the old city hall annex, and also the parking deck that's being demolished now is also part of the site that would be offered. The environmental cleanup cost, I don't think, would be a deterrent to a private investor building a convention center, a hotel, parking garage at the site the city has offered. For the shipyards development, then yes, there is issues in terms of how much it would cost and who would pay for it. And you know, that it really is an impediment to development there.
Right, and you're continuing to follow that one, too. And lots of calls at 549-2937, lots of comments on our Facebook page. Here's just a few. Ben writes, I'd rather see money spent on downtown attractions like an aquarium or a museum of natural history. This city leaves a great deal to be desired for families. There was a movement at one point to put an aquarium along the North Bank. Whatever, did that come up in this meeting? Is that still in play?
I don't think that's still in play. I mean, the idea was they were looking to do it on the shipyards, and the proposal that Shad Khan and his group put forward did not include an aquarium. Now, interestingly, as I said before, one thing when the consultant hired by the city to gauge the feasibility of a convention center was showing these meeting planners, well, what if this were done and that were done? One of the things they showed them was, hey, what if this aquarium were built? And people go, oh, well, yeah, okay, that's a nice attraction. That would add to the appeal of somebody coming in and booking a convention in Jacksonville. But as far as I know, that particular proposal has not really advanced far enough for it to be something where it seems viable at this point that it would happen. It's one of those things that's kind of like a convention center. It's, you don't really make money off an aquarium. So how do you justify the expenditure for the dollars for it?
The USS Adams, though, is part of Shad Khan's vision for the shipyards, the retired Navy ship that would be a museum.
Right. That would have
that
a
would
place
be an
for,
attraction.
Right. That would be a place where it would dock and be a facility where people could go and visit that. So that, again, would tie in with the idea that, yeah, you come to Jacksonville and you leave with a few memories other than whatever PowerPoint presentations you saw at the convention center.
All right. Jessica is in San Marco. Hey, Jessica, what do you think about all this?
Hi. Thank you so much for addressing this topic. I, too, am a big fan of your show, Melissa.
Thank you.
Because I've, in the last few years, had family members who already own a business downtown that's been thriving for the better part of the last 10 years. And they've been looking to buy a building over the last 4 or 5 of those years. And have some really interesting and consistent experiences where they go and tour a lot of these, you know, vacant buildings that have signs up for a realty, some kind of management property they'll tour. And as soon as they start dealing with the realty company and they start looking at business plans and they see, you know, okay, it will take steps X, Y, and Z to bring this building up to code where we will be interested in purchasing it, contact stops with those companies and with those owners. It seems like those owners are not interested in investing at all in those properties to make them realistic to sell and get tenants in there. And this has been about their experience with literally 4 or 5 buildings over the last 4 years. And it just strikes me as interesting. And then also you have landlords like, you know, the company that owns the corner where Chomp Chomp and that Borough Bar used to be. They wanted to jack up the rent on those tenants. And when those tenants afford it, move out elsewhere, those owners are perfectly happy to leave that corner vacant. They don't seem to care the impact of the scene it has on downtown, and they're not making any money either. So it kind of blows my mind. And I really wish that maybe something like Folio Weekly would take up the task, kind of like they do with their Water Hog public shaming campaign. I wish they would maybe think of doing something like that with downtown property owners, people who just, you know, do not seem to care. And our attorneys advised, you know, my family who was looking at property that it just seems like a lot of these property owners downtown are more interested in holding out until the day that the city eventually buys them out.
Thank you so much for that. That has come up again and again. What about that, David?
Yeah, if you take a view of downtown development as sort of an inside-out thing, which is the best way to do it is to, from the center of the city out, that means you really have to find uses for these old buildings. I would suspect that people who are interested in downtown development would be disheartened by the comments that we just heard, because that's a key. So you would think that people who have these buildings would want to find users for them and sellers for them or buyers for them. It is expensive to take old buildings and renovate them. But, you know, that's really a drag on downtown, is all the old vacant buildings, that some of which you just look at them and go, wow, with a little bit of, or maybe a lot of investment, they could really be showpieces for what a great, thriving downtown's like. And they're all so close together, so you can just walk from one to the next.
Jessica, we're doing a segment on water hogs next week, by the way, on this program. We'll speak with Folio about that. Also, your newspaper has reported, David, that the city has said they don't want to be in the property management business. But the TU reported that, in fact, the city owns hundreds of these properties. Two. That's another little known fact.
Right. And it's been a struggle for the city in some cases to find buyers for some of the pieces of property it owns. That's a big challenge in terms of finding users and uses for these older buildings. You don't want to tear them all down. They've got good bones. You want to find users for them, but it's a challenge.
Robert emails the show. A caller just said there's no work or business downtown. There is every type of day-to-day life business downtown or close by, from grocer to dry cleaner to daycare to pet store. Of course, tens of thousands of people who work for huge corporations are also working downtown. Downtown apartments stay full, and available commercial lease space is at its lowest in over a decade. Naysayers should take note. The trend is clearly positive. Bobby on the north side. Hi, Bobby. Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, I believe that, you know, the city should go ahead and tear down the property on that lot, because we've had maintenance costs with that for a long time. Just the maintenance we spent over the last 10 years on the old city hall would have probably paid for the demolition. And those are older buildings, and you're going to have asbestos, and it's And being that a convention center isn't a great economic draw in and of itself, I believe that the city should, you know, clean it down to a bare postage stamp so a developer can look at an open vista and see what they can do with it. And also, we could sell it as an opportunity to tie in convention with cruise trips, you know, cruise convention type things. And being that mid-sized convention center on the river, I think it would be a draw for the city. But I believe the city should be responsible for tearing down the structure on it now. I think it would be much more viable for a private entity then. What do y'all think?
Thank you, Bobby.
Well, one idea is that if for whatever reason it doesn't pan out that you need a convention center, the numbers just don't add up at this point, still tear down the buildings and turn it into a nice little, for now, park where people can go and sit on along the riverfront. And so it's not just these big, hulking, empty buildings.
With a bunch of rats running around inside.
Yeah, who knows what it's like inside. Yeah, it's probably right out of a Stephen King episode to walk through.
I know there was video taken some time ago that showed pretty big rats inside those buildings.
I believe it.
Michael in Middleburg. Hey, Michael, your thoughts.
Well, kudos to everyone who's calling in. It's evident that there are so many people who truly do care about the development of the city and drawing businesses and making it a destination place. And kudos to Jacksonville for the development that they've made over the last decade. You know, I remember hearing someone from Tampa say that, oh, the Jaguars are coming. Jacksonville's not going to be prepared for how it's going to expand and grow. And it's evident that we are. Being in Middleburg, South Middleburg, Jacksonville is a destination place, and it's quite far from me. But there's some ill-use buildings or property that's being misused or not. For instance, the county jail, the police station on the river, we have such a beautiful waterway that I don't think we're quite making the best use of. And there are some other areas that are blighted and have changed and been redeveloped, and there are still some more to go. So kudos to that, and I'll take your comments off the air.
Thank you, Michael. Yeah, thanks for that. One more call, Jeff in Mandarin. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yes, I wanted to just speak to the absence of green space downtown. You know, we wonder why people don't live downtown or want to live downtown in greater numbers. If you go to any suburban or St. John's County development, the first thing they tout is their green space amenities, their recreational facilities, and so forth. And I see nothing in the planning for downtown for that. If it was up to me, I would take the shipyards and the district property and make that green space and then develop around those properties where people would have those green spaces as amenities. If you look at any major city in the United States that has a successful urban core, they have significant green space. I'm not talking about one block like Hemming Plaza. I'm talking about green space where people can jog, and walk their dogs, play volleyball. Even Manhattan has more green space by far than anything in Jacksonville. If you could imagine New York, people living in Manhattan without Central Park, it'd be a different city. And if we don't put this acreage aside today while we can, it won't be available decades to come. This is a missed opportunity not to convert these spaces to permanent green space.
Thanks, Jeff. Lots of feedback, lots of calls this morning. People are so engaged on this issue, David. I hope they read your piece today in the Times Union.
I hope so, too, and there will be more to come. That's for sure.
We'll continue to follow it. He's David Bauerlein of the Florida Times Union. Thanks for being here, as always. Much more still ahead. It's a new movie shot and produced here in Jacksonville. We'll speak to the filmmakers behind In Utero. But up next, the circus is back in town. A new type of circus. That's after this.
We'll be right back. We've updated the WJCT app to make it even better. Stay up to date with local and national NPR news from your phone or tablet. Listen live to First Coast Connect or any of your favorite radio programs. Stay connected and informed. Download the WJCT app today. Available at the Apple App Store and Google Play.
Calling all educators, WJCT and Community First Credit Union are proud to present the 5th Annual Teach Conference, an event created by teachers to engage, empower, and inspire. Saturday, February 10th at the Hyatt Regency Hotel. Tickets are $30. Tickets purchased for the 2016 and 2017 events will be honored. Share ideas with colleagues, learn new ways to engage students, and empower yourself to inspire others. Bring a friend and get your tickets today at wjct.org/teach.
Wouldn't it be nice to know what's in the local daily newspaper, even if you have blindness or diminishing eyesight? WJCT's radio reading service can help. You'll hear what's in the Florida Times Union every day, articles, op-eds, obituaries, even the comics. Sign up at wjct.org/radio reading. Our thanks to Florida Eye Specialists, Delta Gamma of UNF, and the Radio Reading Service volunteer readers for giving voice to the printed word.
Join us Sunday nights for fresh programming beginning at 9 with On the Beam with me, David Luckin, as we spotlight music from the 30s and 40s.
I'm on the beam, time's flying by.
Followed by Taste Test with host Damian Lamar presenting Urban Radio After Dark.
There is a place that I'm saving.
On the Beam and Taste Test, Sunday nights at 9, only on 89.9 FM. Your community, your world, your music.
Welcome back. Well, the Big Top is in town this month. A new kind of circus, the Varnados Circus, is coming to the St. Augustine Amphitheater. Created by former Ringling Brothers ringmaster Kevin Varnados, the Varnados Circus wraps world-class circus acts into a Broadway musical style format. It's called the American Circus with the heart of a Broadway show. Kevin Varnados, welcome to Studio 5.
Thanks
for being here.
Delighted to be here. Thank you.
This is exciting. And so you started out as a ringmaster with Ringling Brothers, correct?
Yes. Many years ago, I was looking for work as a young singer, dancer guy in New York, and a fateful audition changed my life.
And you became that guy.
That dude with the sparkles.
The sparkly costume.
And this incredible huge production happening all around. And living and seeing America from a vantage point very few people get the chance to see.
I'm sure that was amazing. And so, of course, as most people know, the traditional Ringling Brothers Circus folded its tent due to controversy over the use of live animals.
Among other things.
Your circus, though, is a different way of doing the circus. How does this bring the traditional circus back to audiences, but without the use of animals, and still entertain the public?
Well, I think that you can make a circus. Circus is not a four-letter word.
Right.
And some of those controversies, and I know many people on both sides, wonderful people, all of them. My ultimate goal is to bring magic and wonder to families. That's what I want to do. And I think that you can do that with an amazing human-powered performance. And so we put up a tent, a magical, about 300-seat circus tent. And being inside that space, seeing these live performances, acrobats flying around, lots of comedy, daredevils, and people. You can go on a date. You can take your kids. It's like a Broadway show and Cirque du Soleil put together.
And the Broadway singing and dancing is really a new element. That sounds exciting, too.
Yes, well, I did that a lot at the Ringling shows. You know, the ringmaster would sing there. But I come from musical theater, and I love storytelling. And so taking people on an adventure where you can infuse music and song into the performance, it's really what people will respond to a great deal when they come and see this thing.
And good timing for you, this hit movie is out now, The Greatest Showman, about P.T. Barnum.
I planned to do that. Yeah. It was all my
plan. Yeah, you planned it all out. That's right. Hugh Jackman
idea.
Plays P.T. Barnum. And
Zac Efron.
Zac Efron's in it. Zendaya. That's all about how the circus started.
Yes. I would like to challenge Mr. Jackman and Mr. Efron to see really who is the greatest showman out there.
I would like
to invite them personally to come and see the show in St. Augustine. It's really something to have a team of people who smack steel into the ground and lift the canvas to the air and then go on to perform. And we work as an ensemble, a team. We really are. We are the circus. We make it happen, all of us.
This is the traditional experience, a custom-made classic red and white striped tent, mm-hmm. a classic big top.
It is. I had it made in California so that we could far exceed any requirements engineering across the country, because I showed it to the fire marshal and stuff like that. So it's a really beautiful, beautifully made tent.
And people will see aerialists, acrobats, juggling, comedians, daredevilry, Broadway-style singing and dancing, and there's even a charitable component too, correct?
Yes. Well, we're working with St. Francis House. They have a project called Port in the Storm they're working on right now. This is they're based out of St. Augustine, and they're helping to build a shelter for homeless youth specifically. And they did a lot of wonderful things, not just for immediate needs, but helping people really make a life plan.
Very nice. So a portion of the proceeds going to that good cause.
Yes.
Now, you started out as a ringmaster. You're now in charge of the whole production.
It's very different to be as the singer and performer and then suddenly to be actually having to...
That's right. The CEO.
There's a lot of stuff. Yes, absolutely.
Do you still get to do some performing, or are you the business guy now?
I'll be singing and dancing just like everyone out there.
Really?
I will. It sounds crazy, and some people are, how can you do all those things? And well, it's because I've got a great team, and they help create the illusion like we have everything under control. At the circus, there's so many things happening, and we... building that culture of caring about each other and respecting each other. And when I hire people on, I actually ask them what their real dreams are. And so I try and find a way to give them a chance to do that at the circus. And when we accomplish that, they look at not just their own job, but the whole ball of wax, and they make the whole company, the guest experience better. So
very nice. Now, this is a family affair for you, I understand. Your wife, Diana, was a mm-hmm. former dancer at Disneyland.
Yes, she was. And now she's putting up with my antics as we cover the country coast to coast.
She's doing this with you?
She is. It really takes a certain kind of person to live this mm-hmm. life. It's not a 9-to-5 job. This is a true vocation. But we're very passionate about it. We really believe that it's an important thing, being together, sharing this kind of magic with people live. I mean, I think that people could use a smile now, perhaps more than ever. So
sure.
I'm really excited to be a part of giving them that.
This kicks off next Wednesday in the parking lot of the amphitheater in St. Augustine. And people can come out beforehand to sort of have a pre-show party, right?
We call it a pre-show party, yes. So we open the doors of the circus an hour before the performance, and there are strolling performers in there. There's classic gourmet circus snacks. Mm-hmm. All these places you can snap selfies, and just being inside that tent is really magical. It really means something to me to see it go up. And I had no idea years ago I had no idea Ringling was going to be closing its show when I started doing this.
Oh, really?
And I started this many years ago, 5 years ago, but 20 years if I count when I started singing for other people, but building a company. So to be in this position now where we can carry that torch forward and continue that tradition, it means a great deal to me and to my circus family. So really excited about that.
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure. And I'm sure to all the families that will get to come out and enjoy this experience. So get your tickets for the Varnardos Circus, the traditional big top experience. Tickets and showtimes at venardoscircus.com, VENARDOS circus.com. 17 shows between next Wednesday, January 24th, and running through February 10th. The maestro himself, the creator of it all, Kevin Varnardos, kudos and have fun.
Thanks.
Enjoy your time
much.
Here.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
We'll be right back.
The First Amendment protects the press from the president, but not from his many insults, like fake news. Our founding fathers considered a free press so important they protected it in the Constitution. Now, with President Trump denouncing news outlets, some repressive regimes are following suit. When fake news gets real. Next time on 1A. Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Christian Picciolini was a teenager looking for identity and purpose when he joined a violent white supremacist group, believing he was protecting the white race from extinction. He eventually got out and now works to combat hate and racism. On the next Fresh Air, we'll hear about his transformation and his new memoir, White American Youth. Join us.
Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Refugee resettlement can be a touchy subject in this country, and the uncertainty as a result takes its toll.
They're at a loss for what's going to happen and how their future looks as far as, you know, seeing certain family members.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. We check in on Erie, Pennsylvania, and the economics of resettlement next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
We all tell lies on dates. I've told girls that I cook on my own, that I didn't watch the royal wedding. But this was different because this time I was lying about who I was.
Join us for true stories about disguise, cover-ups, and secret identities. That's next time on the Moth Radio Hour from PRX. Saturdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Finally, this hour, it's a new movie produced, written, and filmed right here in Jacksonville. In Utero is a hardcore thriller that's a bit of a throwback to classic films of the 70s, like Last House on the Left and I Spit on Your Grave. Remember that one? Take a listen to the trailer.
Where are they taking us?
Nowhere.
Kind of like this little plan you got going.
She wants my baby. I'm going to throw you a shower.
It's showtime.
You don't have to do this.
My house, my rules.
I think you've made your point.
I'm not some monster.
Why would you stay with these psychos if you didn't have to?
I'm someone with needs, just like you.
Oh, yeah, we're so much alike.
All right, writer-director Royce Freeman is here in studio, star Jessica Lamb, and director of photography Danielle Andujar. Hey, guys. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Nice to be here.
All right. I remember I Spit on Your Grave very, very well. So this is sort of in the tradition of these grindhouse films. What Absolutely. Inspired you to make this movie?
In a nutshell, without spoiling it, it sounds kind of strange to say that it came to me in a dream.
Okay.
I dreamt a scene that wasn't necessarily the main character, but one of the main characters. And they were in peril, and I woke up, and it was vivid. And so I had to backwards snowball a situation to justify how it happened. So you have the lead who's pregnant, one of the leads. And then so I was like, well, if she's going to be held hostage, I wanted her to have a friend to bounce off of and wanted the friend to have something interesting going on. So then there was relationships, and there was the band of, you know, individuals who were – the villains, I guess. I mean, they're not completely evil. They have noble goals, but they're going about them in the worst possible way.
Okay. Jessica, tell us about your part in this film.
My character is probably the one who I think goes through a lot of the great abuse in it. But I had a great time playing her and bringing her to life on the screen. She very much embodies the, I guess, growth in that we experience just in a more dramatic way, I guess you could say. And when Royce approached me to do the movie, I was very interested in doing it because it wasn't just one linear storyline. It was a bunch of different things that brought it all together. So I didn't get to play one character. I got to play someone that added to a actual story, not just a linear thing.
Sure. You know. And cinematographer Danielle Andujar, this film was shot locally. So Jacksonville's a character in the film too, correct?
Yes, absolutely.
What scenes will people recognize? What locations?
A lot of the surrounding woods and really beautiful locations around Jacksonville and Middleburg. I think that this film really served to showcase both the local landscape and really fantastic talent local to the Southeast. You know, we have, of course, Jessica and also Amy Tarrin, Kenny Logsdon, and Finial Godbold also play some of the leads and have really fantastic on-screen chemistry. They're really fun to watch together. So,
yeah, and there's a really burgeoning film community in this area.
Absolutely.
And you guys are part of it. So that's exciting to see. When is In Utero going to be screening? When can people see this movie?
The genesis of the project and the premiere are kind of come full circle because me and Daniel met at the Jacksonville Short Film Showcase, which is at the Sunray Cinema, you know, every year, sometimes more than once a year. And we both did a short film and we kind of connected that way. And then a lot of the people that worked on the project all kind of met and kind of swapped information and stuff. So we want to premiere the movie in the summer at the place that we kind of birthed it. So we want to premiere it at the Jacksonville, the showcase. We want to premiere it at the Sunray this summer.
Mm-hmm. Well, you'll have to come back when you have your red carpet event.
Oh, yeah.
And preview it here on this show.
That sounds good. Jacksonville is where a lot of film started, like at the beginning of cinema. And then, you know, they kind of kicked us out because we were getting rowdy and sent us to Hollywood.
It's so sad. Oh, what could have been?
Yeah. I mean, so it's cool that all these film festivals and showcases happen locally because they can kind of bring back that that film community that we used to have.
And filmmakers like, you know, like Royce and also Durden Godfrey and Justin Mann or some other local filmmakers, there's a really thriving community here that's trying to bring that industry back to Jacksonville.
Right, and build it here, Jessica, rather than try to build your career in California.
Yeah, everybody that I've met that I've gotten to work with has been absolutely wonderful. And everybody, especially, you know, Royce and Daniel for being the first feature length that I've gotten to film here in Jacksonville. Everybody, we all got along great. And like Daniel said, the chemistry was fantastic. And I've gotten an opportunity to work with several other people in the community. And you're all right. It is a wonderful growing community, and I do hope that it flourishes, and I can't wait to see where it goes, and I look forward to working with other people and making that community bigger than it is now.
Well, we'll talk to you this summer with the premiere of In Utero. Royce Freeman, Daniel Andujar, star Jessica Lamb, thanks for being here, everybody.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
All right, that's our show. 1A is out next. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow for our Friday Media Roundtable. See you then. Bundle up out there. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.